Welcome back to Footwork, a podcast for those who dream big, never settle, and make their own path. I'm Sean.
And I'm Dylan. Together with guests, we share stories and tips every Monday to educate, inspire, and create a community built of soccer players and dream chasers.
Better to have a short life that is full of what you like doing than a long life spent in a miserable way.
Welcome to Footwork. So, James Lawrence, welcome to Footwork.
Yeah, hi guys.
So we always start with this little motto we have here, which is make your own path. And as someone who's played in quite a few countries now, different cultures, different demands, what does make your own path mean to you?
Well, that's quite interesting you say that, because actually, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I was doing actually another podcast. And on that podcast, they also kind of asked me about my journey. I said, in a way, I've had a very individual path throughout my career. I think what it means to me is kind of just go with the flow, go wherever you think is best for you, make a decision and stick to it. And wherever that takes you is kind of the best thing for you at that time. And you got to be happy with that decision. I mean, I've had a very, I wouldn't say a very typical journey as a footballer. I think I've done things that others maybe perhaps have not. And I've seen different areas of the world and I've really enjoyed it. So I take all that experience with me. And I think it's really good to kind of do those things. You get other experiences throughout the world, and you kind of get to see different cultures and live in different places. And to me, that's something really beautiful that you can take away from football. So I think, yeah, I would say that.
And before we dive deeper into your amazing journey, who are you? Where were you? And where are you going?
Yeah, so James Lawrence. I'm currently at SDFC Nuremberg in Germany, south of Germany. I started off my career at a very young age at Arsenal in England. I grew up in London. I went through kind of youth academies in England. I played for Queen's Park Rangers before moving to Holland. So my whole family moved to Holland and I decided to go with them. I then played for a small team called Haarlem just outside Amsterdam for 1 year before being scouted by Ajax Amsterdam. I then spent 2 years in the youth academy at Ajax before moving around to a couple of other teams in Holland, kind of searching for first team football. So playing in under 23s of Sparta Rotterdam and then RKC Waalwijk in the south. And from there, I was kind of really wanting to make that breakthrough into first team football. And the place that offered me that, funnily enough, was Slovakia. And so I went into the first league in Slovakia to a team that was looking really promising. That also had a few Dutch players, a Dutch owner. So that was kind of like familiarity for me. And I went and played there for 2 years, was very, very successful in those first 2 years, won the league and cup double twice. And then I made a move to Anderlecht in Belgium. And that was kind of the biggest kind of step in my career up to that point, was the move to Anderlecht. From Anderlecht, I then went to St. Pauli in the north of Germany for 3 years. And now, as I said before, in the south of Germany, is the FC Nuremberg.
And speaking of Nuremberg, your time here now, how does it feel to kind of be off to the races in another season and, you know, the home that you set up here now in Nuremberg?
Yeah, it feels good to be off again. We didn't really have much of a break anyway. We only had a few weeks off anyway. But yeah, it feels good to be off, after the whole preseason. The preseason is pretty much hell and you've got to get through it every year. But we've made it through and now you're kind of into that whole journey of the season again, which is actually really nice because you get much more rhythm kind of thing and everything flows much better.
And as the new season's underway, do you set out personal goals when you start a new season? And I guess how over time has that changed?
Interesting. Yes, always. So I always set myself small goals and big goals. I set myself kind of very achievable goals, things that I can progress over during the season. And then I set myself kind of bigger goals that I may or may not make, but it's something to kind of work towards. And interestingly, over my career, it's the goals used to be very, win the league, do this, do that, do that. And as my career's gone on and I've gotten kind of older, it's become more stay fit, play all these games, don't get injured, kind of extend your career as long as possible, those kind of things. So keep your body fit. So that's quite funny, actually, how things have changed over time.
Have you scaled it down as well? Because I've noticed over the years, I've kind of gotten into the routine of having maybe a bit more daily or weekly goals to kind of set me up for success on the weekend. Because as you know, as a player, anything can really happen. And especially as an attacking player, it used to be score 20 goals, but you know, that's a very tough thing to do for anyone. So you kind of, what I found in personal success is to strip it back, and then that helps me perform on the field.
Yeah, so that's pretty much what I mean by with the small goals and then the bigger goals. I did exactly that, and I still do. I have a little whiteboard at home, and I write down my things that I want to accomplish in the week. It's more what I want to focus on. So for example, if I really want to focus on just simply passing in training, mm-hmm. then I'll write down, do this number of passes or play this many progressive passes in training. And then I'll kind of like sit down after the training and go, well, how many of those did I really do? And I'll kind of like go home, write that down, and then see if I make that kind of weekly progression. So that's more the things I really work on week to week. And then like I have, you know, the season goals, which is play this many games, keep this many clean sheets, those kind of things. So yeah, exactly like you say, you kind of like go step by step during the week and then see where you end up at the end.
I love to hear that you're physically writing things down too. I think that's a great thing for young guys to kind of take in, that whole process. Have you always done that in your career? And does it kind of spill over into any types of journaling to help you kind of off the field as well?
Yeah, so I've done it, I think, since I moved to Anderlecht, I've done it. So about 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And it was actually an idea of my manager, who, you know, he's kind of my manager, coach, helps me review game film, helps me mentally, you know. So I talked to him and he basically suggested that I should just get a whiteboard and write down all the things that we're talking about. And so then it just gives you that visual representation of what you're going to work on that week. And it's just very easy to remember because you just walk, you put it somewhere where you can see it in your house, you know, like next to the mirror, wait, in your hallway or something where you're going to walk out. And you just kind of see it and take it in every day that, you know, those are the kind of things that you need to work on. So I would really recommend it. I started doing it, like I said, 6 years ago, and it kind of really helped me mentally to just to have in the back of your head what you're supposed to be doing in the day, instead of going into a training with just kind of like, oh, I'm just going to see where it goes kind of thing. It just really helps you to focus.
Yeah. A purpose for the day. I love that.
Yeah.
How would you describe yourself as a player, and what attributes would you say are crucial to become a pro?
I would say number one would be determination. I think you have to have so much determination. You also have to be able to kind of take a lot of hits. So you have to have tough skin. You know, you have to believe in yourself and also surround yourself with people who believe in you as well. I think, you know, you can't always be the one to believe in yourself and push yourself on. You also need kind of close friends or family who also believe in you sometimes when you're down and you don't believe in yourself, that kind of push you further as well. So I think that in my career has been like a main factor, just not giving up, being really determined to make it as a professional footballer, because my journey wasn't the most smooth or simple. But I just kept going and I kept pushing, and it was something I always wanted, and I just kept working towards that. And in the end, it turned out and that I made it. So I would say those qualities are really, really important. And in terms of the kind of player I am, it's more, I like to be very calm on the ball. I like to kind of make good decisions, try and be progressive, try and keep the ball on the ground, play out from the back as a defender. And as a defender, kind of just win my one-on-one duels. I'm quite good in the air. So aerially, I'm pretty strong. Those are some of my qualities that I have.
How do you feel in the second Bundesliga? And how do you feel in terms of the level of play and the style of play and how your game fits into it?
So I think it also kind of depends on the team you play with, because we have in the second Bundesliga, you have completely different styles from top to bottom. So you have some teams who like to play kind of just long ball, win the second ball and then play from there. And there's not much build up going on. And then you have some other teams who like to play out completely from the back, keep the ball on the floor and stuff like that. So I think I've been quite lucky in the teams that I've been in St. Pauli. It was kind of half-half. Sometimes we just played games where we were just pretty much fighting and putting in a lot of effort, and then also others when we were keeping the ball on the ground. And here as well, I think especially this season, we've really tried to work on building up from the back, creating triangles, creating the third man, creating that extra player for the two against one, you know, like seeing where the press is coming from, playing through the press in that direction. So you find the free man in the back of someone who's pressing. So I think we've really worked on that really well, which is good. That's nice. That's more my style of play. So yeah, that's been really good. But like I said, you have these other teams who then completely counter to that. They play these long football, second balls, kind of traditional. But I think in the second Bundesliga, you have pretty much every game is even. So it's really tough to say, you know, oh, this team there, this team there. everything's very even. So anyone can kind of win or lose on any day. So that's in a way quite exciting because you never really know what's going to happen. It could go either way, but it's a very competitive league.
And you've had the fortune of playing under some big name coaches and in some different countries and things like that. So for you, in terms of, you know, playing under a certain structure or a certain philosophy, do you feel like you're still learning in that regard in terms of different ways to play and different ways which you can kind of excel within a system or bring your own flair to a system?
Yeah, so it's more like, I feel like, yeah, I've learned a lot of different systems throughout my career, and I obviously have different ones that I prefer for my own style and ones that perhaps don't suit me so well. So it's kind of funny, you have to adapt to those systems and try and bring your own thing. Sometimes it's not always going to be possible, and you have to adjust to the system more than the system adjusts to you in a way. But yeah, I prefer personally playing like a four at the back, central defensive midfielder, 2-8, and then kind of wingers and things like that, because that just provides me with the most options. But I've also played in back threes quite often, and I would prefer then to play on the left side. That gives me also kind of more option to carry the ball forward and things like that. So yeah, you have to, when you have different systems and you have different coaches wanting different things from you, you just have to kind of adapt to that. And then once you've adapted, bring your own thing as well.
And then switching in, so speaking on like your time when you were, when you play with Wales and then you come back into your club and country, those systems can be quite varying in terms of what the coaches want. So is it easy enough as a professional to kind of just switch on off in terms of what's demanded of you and how you're supposed to play within that system?
Yeah, it is. It is quite seamless. So you kind of go in, and obviously it's not just like you're going in and playing a game. You go in and then you have training sessions and things like that. So you're practicing your shape and all these different systems. So you do have time to kind of adjust. It's not just like one day to another. Mm-hmm. But then like once you have it in your head, then it's kind of there already. So you can then kind of like just kind of go straight into that mode of, okay, I'm playing this system now. So these are like, this is what I need to do, blah, 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 blah. And then once you come back to the club and you're playing that, you know, the club is kind of your normal system. So that's the one that you're working on day in, day out. So that comes the easiest for you. And then when you're playing with your country, that's the one that you need to kind of more switch into. So, but you only take, you know, a day or two, and you're usually just there already. Yeah.
And now winding the clock back, growing up in youth academies and then like Arsenal and QPR, how were these experiences for you? And at that point in your life, was it basically football or nothing from a young age?
I think no, my parents always tried to keep a balance in life in terms of football, but also education and also extracurricular activities as well. So I was still playing like rugby at school. I was still playing, you know, cricket in the summer and hockey as well at the school that I was at. So I was still doing all these other sports, and, you know, extracurricular activities. Like I was doing a lot of music stuff as well. And then also there was that focus on education. So I think, you know, all the way up until I was about 16, before I moved to Holland in the UK, that's, you know, I split my focus quite well, which wasn't easy because, you know, it was having to do school, and then you would go after school, even though you'd be already, I might have a sports day at school, be playing rugby, and then I've got to switch and then have a training session with football and then play football on the weekend on a Sunday, whereas I've had a game with rugby on the Saturday with the school. So I think that helped me in terms of fitness and things like that, because I was just kind of like constantly playing sports.
Always, yeah.
But yeah, I wouldn't say it was like my 100% focus was on football. It was very, it was really big for me to be at a club like Arsenal at such a young age, because I got to see kind of like how professional it was and just kind of like the facilities, the atmosphere, the coaching, everything was just very intense, and like, you know, you had to be on it every single time. So that I think was like a great place for me to start, because that gave me that intensity that I've kind of carried with me. But I wouldn't say that I knew all I wanted to do was play football within myself, but at the same time I still enjoyed doing other things, so I didn't cut those off completely, and I still kind of enjoyed doing them.
And as you know, football is a game of opinions. And then at such a young age, we've heard, we've read, we've listened to podcasts in terms of people saying that it can be quite cutthroat in England in terms of these academies. So at a young age, you know, kind of reliant on whether these coaches think you're good enough, and then these releases happens and things like that. How do you look back at those sometimes of rejections and kind of weighing that on your value of yourself as a person and as a player?
Yeah, so this comes a little bit back to what I was saying about the, you know, the determination and the resilience, and also that you need other people to believe in you, not just yourself. I mean, I remember so clearly the day that I was kind of released by Arsenal. I remember it like it was kind of yesterday. I remember walking into the office with my dad and being, you know, having to hear at the age of, what was I, like 10 or something, you know, young age, having to hear at that age that they don't think you're good enough to play there, and, you know, they're not going to move forward with you and you're released. So I think, yeah, I think my dad helped more than anyone with that. I think he was always the one to kind of to go away and say, oh, well, listen, they're wrong. You're a great player. You have it in you. I can see it. And so he was always the one who kind of like pushed me forward in that sense when I would, because I was, you know, a 10-year-old boy. And to get that rejection at 10, you're kind of thinking, oh, well, if he doesn't want me, then no one is going to, kind of thing. Yeah. So yeah, my dad always had that belief in me and pushed me forward in that sense. It was never a sense of him pushing me for his own benefit. It was always just him giving me the belief in myself.
And then, I mean, at a very young age, you moved to Holland. Was that purely based on for your football experience? Or you mentioned before that your family moved to Holland, you decided also to move with them.
Yeah, so my mom actually got a job in Amsterdam, and her head office is in Amsterdam. So we went as kind of like a summer trip with the family to see if we liked it there, to kind of adjust a little bit. The original plan was that me and my brother would still go to school in London, because I still had 2 years left of education. He had 1 year left of you know, secondary education. And so the plan was for my dad to go back and forth, my mom to move to Holland, and me and my brother stay in England. While we were in Holland for that 2 month kind of summer holiday kind of thing, I went to train with the team HFC Haarlem just to keep fit and see, you know, basically that was it, keep my rhythm up, and then before going back and going to try and play for a club in England. And after like a couple of weeks, they turned around and said, what are your plans? Because we think actually you could be a really good fit for us and we want you here. And it was at that time that we then, as a family, had to make that decision of, you know, am I going to move with my mom as well, or am I going to stay in England? And I, you know, it was one of those things that I just kind of turned around and went, why not? You know, like, it's a whole new experience. It could be really fun. Why not? Let's make that change. And then my family obviously adjusted around that to find me education in Holland and things like that. It was actually really lucky because I just finished my GCSEs, which is kind of like a cutoff point in England that you do at 16. And then you go on to A levels, which is your final 2 years of school. So there was a kind of clear cut there. It wasn't like I was in the middle of an education. So that was quite lucky in that sense that I could just kind of leave that and then move on to the next.
Did you look at it as something that was going to turn into like something so, I guess, long-term and kind of set the stage of a journey abroad? Did that even occur to you of what stage you were setting?
Not really. No, to be honest, it was more in the time that I was playing there, I just really enjoyed the way that they played football. I really enjoyed the coaching that I was getting. And so it was more on the sense of, because I was enjoying myself so much, I went, like, why not continue enjoying myself and doing this? You know, I was just having fun. And although it was serious and I knew they were, you know, a good youth academy in Holland, I didn't really think, oh, this is going to be their kind of springboard for the next step. Mm-hmm. It was more kind of like, am I enjoying myself at this level? Can I play this level? And am I going to have fun while doing it? And that was, the answer was yes.
And speaking of you enjoying the way they played, what did it do for your development at a young age like that, particularly in Netherlands, where they like to play out of the back, they want their center backs to keep the ball on the ground. What were some of the hardships? And then, of course, the big move to Ajax.
So I think when I was playing in that first year in Holland, I wasn't really thinking too much. I was kind of just playing off instinct, and that seemed to work really well. I did have a really, really good team around me, which was funny because, you know, I think a lot of that team went on to play kind of professional football, and just very luckily that was the team that I came into, that which was a very, very talented team. So it made everything kind of a lot easier. When I went to Ajax, I think there was so much, not pressure, but so much kind of emphasis on tactical side of things. And I did feel very behind. So kind of like in terms of my tactical brain, my tactical knowledge, you know, where, what am I supposed to do when this happens, and positionally, where should I be when that happens, and all this kind of stuff, because the players I was playing with had grown up with the 4-3-3 system for their entire lives. You know, they'd been playing it for their whole youth, whereas I'd been used to kind of 4-4-2, that kind of thing, you know, the kind of traditional English way of playing. And so that was a big adjustment for me, especially kind of with the midfield rotations, the ways that the wingers play in Holland was completely different to kind of what I was used to. I was used to two strikers and not such a width, to having such width in the pitch. But that was, I think, the biggest adjustment for me, was just mentally having to catch up on learning these tactics and kind of positionally what to do. And so that I felt like very behind. And so I was kind of like always trying to catch up for the next kind of 2 years to all these kids who had kind of been playing this for their whole lives.
And did you feel like there was a moment where you kind of reached that catch up and then you were able to kind of shine and start and not really maybe second guess yourself or think too much into it when you were on the field?
I don't think I've still caught up now, I think.
Yeah, that's fair, to be honest.
I think there's always going to be new things coming on top of that anyway. You know, I'm always learning, I'm always developing, and I quite like that. You know, that you can keep learning and keep developing that side of your game, and tactics are always evolving. We've seen it, especially in the past, I'd say 5-6 years, especially with kind of the growth of Pep as a manager and him bringing kind of all these new ideas that everyone is then trying to kind of adapt to and bring some of their own. You look at teams like Brighton, Hove Albion now, the way that they're playing football is also kind of, in my opinion, revolutionary the past few years that they've been doing it. And so you're always going to learn new things. So I think you're always chasing after this kind of like unreachable goal, but in a way, it's really, really nice.
How do you look back on the time with Ajax as a whole and what it did for your development? And then also, do you have any certain highs that you kind of look back at?
Yeah, I think Ajax was a pretty tough period for me. I think it did so much for my development mentally, physically, and you know, tactically. So much for my development. I learned so much when I was there. I did have quite a tough time there because the jump in training was so intense for me that my body kind of couldn't keep up. And I had a couple of injuries, you know, in my first and second year at Ajax that kind of slowed that progress down a little bit. So I look back at it with a little bit of kind of like a half feeling of, you know, what if I'd have been able to be fit that whole time at Ajax and what could have been kind of thing. But for my development, I think it was really amazing. And some of the players I got to play with there was kind of absolutely fantastic, just completely different level. And even some of the coaches that I got to work with, just their kind of level as well and their way of thinking and their intensity as well really helped me as well. So, I mean, lots of highlights. Weirdly, one that I kind of think of a lot is when Dennis Bergkamp came to training. He was doing his kind of like coaching badges, and he decided to come and kind of like do as an assistant coach in our training sessions and part of his badges. And he then kind of trained with us. And so it was just kind of like a surreal experience, that kind of happening, yeah.
So I read in a fascinating article in the Correspondent that I believe it was your time at Ajax that you were kind of also working on the side. So you were doing data entry tasks with your mother. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
So that balance on top of already coming into, you know, this incredible schedule. I mean, that's quite difficult.
Yeah. I mean, this goes on from what I was saying earlier about kind of just gaining those experiences and doing different things and not focusing 100% on football in that sense of closing off to everything else. I was very, very football focused. I was doing kind of like half days at school, and then we would get picked up by buses that would then take us to the training ground, and we'd then kind of like have training. So I was missing quite a lot of school at that point, just through no fault of my own, just because I was having to leave halfway through. And then at the same time, kind of working for my mom, doing this data entry, which was horrifically boring. But it was just kind of have a different experience of what life is like and what kind of like a 9-to-5 is like. So on my complete off days, that's what I was doing. And it was an experience.
As we've spoken to many guests and many professional footballers at various levels, it seems to be a theme that at some point we realize that not just focusing purely on football sometimes can actually be negative. And to have something that takes your mind off football can actually increase your performance, which is contrary to what many think when they're younger. Have you continued to do stuff like this throughout your career to kind of, okay, you have football here, but when you have a complete off day, you like to do so and so?
Yeah, so I always try and find different things to do on my off days and in my spare time. I don't usually like, for example, things like FIFA, and I don't watch a lot of football. I don't play FIFA because I just feel like it's just too much for me. I can't really switch off if I'm playing FIFA or watching football. And then I'm not just watching the game, I'm kind of analyzing the game and I'm thinking, oh, he's done that because there's that, you know, and then when we do that, that happens. And so my brain's constantly kind of just like yapping at me, and I find that to be very full on. And so I much prefer to kind of take my mind off by doing something kind of completely different, usually outside, you know, even simple things like going for a walk or, you know, being kind of outside in nature, doing whatever. It kind of just completely takes your mind away from the football. And I think that is super important because your brain needs that time off as well. I think anyone who knows about having a healthy brain, you have to also let your brain kind of switch off in order to let your brain absorb everything that you've been doing in the day. And so I just think that's kind of healthy to have things that can take your mind off it, away from the thing that you're focused on the most, because I feel like it gives you kind of like that refreshed feeling.
So you're still doing some data entry in your free time, or?
Definitely no data entry. Was the most boring thing ever, but it was, in a way, it was like the whole office vibe was kind of nice, you know. Mm-hmm, but I enjoyed that because, you know, then you have different like connections, like, you know, it's different people and you're talking, and so that was kind of nice, that whole side of thing. But the data entry,
can imagine. We want to head to Slovakia now, because this transition here is definitely a turning point in your career and kind of is another stage setting. So I just kind of want to know, in terms of where your head was at when this move is coming out, and what you had in terms of possibilities in the moment, and basically, I guess, the mindset that you had going into it and how you look back at that.
Yeah. So I basically had opportunities to play kind of first team football in the second league in Holland. Mm-hmm. So I had two or three offers kind of to go and play for a new club in the second league. And I kind of thought, you know, is that for me? I ideally want to be playing in a top league and playing for something. And the owner of the club in Slovakia was Dutch. And he kind of had a philosophy of, he wanted to play the Dutch system, but then in Slovakia, and see how that would match up against the traditional Slovakian teams. So he was kind of getting players who either were Dutch or had a Dutch football background. I'm bringing them over to Slovakia. So when I got there, I think we had three players at the time who were Dutch or had played in Holland. And then we also had kind of like two Brazilians, two Nigerians. So we were a very diverse team. And so we had kind of like different backgrounds, and then it all kind of came together and it was hugely successful. So, you know, kind of making that decision was more, it was not about where it was. It was more about, am I playing at the highest level? What are my chances to play, kind of to play for something, to play for a championship or play for like Europa League or Champions League qualification? At the time that I went there to have a look at the club and everything, they were playing in the Europa League qualifications against Hull City, I think. And they narrowly kind of lost against Hull in those kind of two games. And I was thinking, wow, this level is really good, actually. And, you know, I'd be playing for something here. So that was more the thinking behind that. And yeah, it turned out to be really successful.
How did you look? Because I also read that you, seeing them play and seeing the culture around it, did that have any effect on your decision to kind of see how much love and passion and support there was in the stadium when you were there?
Yeah, so I watched that Europa League game kind of live. And to me, that was kind of the first time that I was or would be able to, let's say, play in front of like a big crowd. And so that was also like a big thing for me. I knew in the second league in Holland, I wouldn't really be playing in front of a lot of people. And then kind of like watching this game, I was very like, the atmosphere was good. And that was really enjoyable for me. And I think kind of every footballer's dream is to play in front of the biggest crowds and to hear that noise and to really take in that atmosphere. So that was another big thing for me.
And the club at the time had a reputation for kind of sending players on and, you know, developing them. And then you'll see them sign for bigger teams, bigger contracts in different leagues. So at that time, it seems like you're kind of playing for the next contract in a way. Of course, you're playing for the badge and you're playing for the club, but a lot of not just the players, but, you know, the management has this in the back of their minds. So for you seeing other players going and still trying to keep your head down and looking for that next move, was there any difficulty in that kind of, in that comparison of, oh, maybe this guy went before me and I'm, you know, I'm playing well, but I haven't gotten that next move yet?
Yeah, a little bit. So yeah, when, you know, you're having success and you're playing well, and then you see kind of like another player go to this club and you're thinking, oh, I would, you know, that would be, I would have loved that move. Or, and you see someone else go there and you say, oh, I would have loved that move. That would have been really cool. So you kind of see all this happening, but in a way, I don't know, you just feel kind of like, okay, be patient. Your time will come, the right time. You just keep doing what you're doing. And then you'll kind of like have your moment. And then for me, I had that moment. We had an amazing run in the kind of Champions League and Europa League qualifications. And I was a big part of those kind of 6 to 8 games that we play. And that was kind of my time to shine in a way. And I really kind of felt that moment. So it was just kind of having that patience of knowing that I would eventually get the kind of same as they had before me. And in a way, I was kind of like, when I went to Anderlecht, that was a huge move. And in my opinion, kind of the best move that anyone even before me had made up till that point. So to me, that was like the justification of, you know, well done for being patient and kind of like, here you go. So, yeah.
And how was it for you when you kind of, you didn't have many opportunities or offers, and then all of a sudden after that game against Feyenoord, it seemed that everybody wanted you?
Yeah, it was, I think you when you play football, you kind of know quite a lot of it is to do with the luck of who sees you when, who's scouting you in what game, and, you know, how long have they been following you, and when they come to watch you live for that kind of first or second time, how do you perform? And of course, you don't know, you know, you don't know when or who's watching. So it's all kind of just a little, like, I think of it as kind of like 80% luck of, I happened to be playing that game. And I had an amazing game up against Robin Van Persie, and you happen to have the correct people there in the stands watching you at that time. And then that kind of becomes like a big thing. And once, I think, kind of like one big club wants you, then the next one kind of hears about that. And then there's a kind of like a knock-on effect of, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 clubs wanting you in the end. And then you kind of get to choose. So the way I see it, it's a lot to do with luck and timing. But at the end of the day, you have to be the one to put those performances out there consistently, so that when someone is watching, then, you know, they'll be impressed.
Yeah, and just like you said, it kind of had that snowball effect, and it kept on rolling, and it kind of rolled into your time at Wales. So, I mean, a lot of the public weren't kind of aware that you were available in that regard, and then it kind of came to what the public saw was, I guess, a bit out of nowhere. But for you and your dad, it seemed like this was kind of years of putting in the work, those consistent performances, and also kind of making them aware that you were available. This moment to be able to be named to Giggsy's, you know, Welsh national team, what did that mean for you? Was that a dream come true?
Yeah, absolutely. That was kind of one of the pinnacles of my career so far. So I was, you know, ecstatic, and my whole family were ecstatic as well for me. Yeah, it was one of those moments of you kind of really sit down and really dwell on it and think about it and go just like, wow, you know, like it's one of those moments that really hits you as kind of like, I've really done this for myself. I've really managed to make it this far. And that was just simply amazing.
And you've had some high profile coaches, like you said, Giggsy, Dennis Bergkamp was at your youth time at Ajax, Frank de Boer. Is this distracting as a player, or once you're in the session, you don't really think about it? It's maybe the moments where you have a time to or take a sip of water or something that you realize, like, wow, this is Giggsy, this is Bergkamp.
Yeah, it's definitely in the kind of the downtime that you really kind of think about it. When you're out on the pitch, you're so focused on the training and the football anyway, there's no real time to think, you know, who's telling me this? Is it Is there Ryan Giggs? Oh, okay, then I'll listen. You know, you just kind of get on with it. But definitely, like afterwards, you actually, you know, even before, you kind of go and you're thinking, wow, you know, Giggs is taking the session today. I better be on it, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, playing for players like who have done it at this level, it can be, I mean, from, I guess from fan perspective too, it can be quite easy to get swept up in that. But at the end of the day, you know, you've played for so many coaches in your life. It's just kind of another day at the office.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is, in a way, it's in a sense, it's validation. So, you know, that they've played at that level, and for them to then have their faith in you, it's that extra little bit of validation of, you know, they kind of like, they know what they're talking about. And for them to have faith in you, it gives you that extra kind of boost of confidence, which is super nice.
Coming back to your time with Anderlecht and then with Pauly out on loan, how would you describe this? I mean, was a loan something that you kind of felt was always going to be in the cards after that first year, or how did this kind of plan come about?
Yeah, so my first year at Anderlecht was very turbulent. I mean, I think I had 3 or 4 different coaches during one season, which is kind of never a good recipe, really, to be honest. And so, yeah, it was kind of like up and down. It was a bit all over the place that season. And even though I did play quite a lot of games, I think I played kind of 25, 26 games in that season. You never really know what's going to happen afterwards. So of course, you know, we didn't know who our coach was going to be for the season afterwards. We didn't know what system they wanted, what kind of players they wanted to bring in or not. And so that was kind of all up in the air that summer. And so there was a lot of kind of talk of like what's going to be happening. And then Vincent Kompany came in and he basically said, I need a whole refresh. And so basically all the players who had played the previous season were kind of shifted out, and he kind of brought in a lot of youth players and then kind of his own players that fitted his philosophy at the time. And so as like the players who had played in the season before, we felt very kind of like just shifted to the side. And we had then, you know, we had open discussions with him, and he said, look, like you're probably not going to get much game time, so it might be better for you to look for something else. And at that time, St. Pauli came with an offer of a loan. And I had a look kind of online. I Googled them. I Googled the city. I Googled Hamburg. I Googled the fans. I Googled the stadium. I Googled some highlights and things like that. And yeah, I was pretty quickly convinced that that would be a really, really awesome step. And also another great experience to have to play for a club like that. So then I just kind of went, yeah, let's do it.
Did you feel that flip side of kind of how we talked about playing for those big managers and playing for such an established center back throughout the years for Man City? Did you feel the adverse effects of that in terms of validation from a coach who maybe didn't see you as part of his plans at the time?
Yeah, it was definitely like a blow, but I wouldn't say it was everything. It was more, I understood the situation. I understood kind of like what he wanted from, you know, he wanted that complete freshness. He wanted to kind of have a massive clear out, which I completely understand. It's you know, that's kind of like his prerogative, is coming in as a coach after a disaster season, which it wasn't, but you know, for Anderlecht's level, it was. So you know, I completely kind of get that, and it wasn't, I don't think it was a personal thing. I didn't really take it in a personal way. I saw it more as we were kind of like a group, and it was more that the group was kind of moved forward. So I tried not to take it too personally. Of course, you're going to feel it a little bit, like, you know, I thought I would have fitted really well into that system kind of thing. But yeah, if a manager doesn't see that, then they don't see that. And it's usually never personal, weirdly. A lot of people take it personally, but you can't really do that. I find that dwells on your mind a little bit too long. So you just kind of have to let it go and move on.
And speaking about your time at St. Pauli, I know you're playing for a rival now, so we can't do too much praising, but just how do you look back at that experience? Again, about like the club, the culture, the fans, and do you have a favorite memory there?
I'd probably go all the way back to my very first game, actually, I think, because that was my first experience of the Millantor, the stadium. So my first experience in front of the fans. It was also a derby game, and then I also scored a goal. So it was, I don't think I could have had a better first game. Yeah. I think that was a really big high. My adrenaline levels were through the roof for the next week. So, it was just amazing.
what a derby that is too. Like just a world-renowned derby in Hamburg to have that kind of stat line at the end of your first game is just, that's incredible.
This wasn't the big derby. It was this was the North Derby. It was against Holstein Kiel.
Holstein Kiel. Okay.
Still also though,
big.
Yeah.
Still a big derby. But and I guess one of my second best memories at Pauli was the derby against HSV, which I don't think we'd won in kind of like 8 years or something, or ages. And you know, we played at home and then we won, and that was also an amazing, amazing feeling.
So sick.
Yeah. Amazing experience, I'm sure. We don't want to bring it up too much, but this is just another hurdle that footballers have to kind of deal with, and one that you've had a few times in your life. And these are these injury blows. So as someone who's played at the highest levels, I think this would be really good information to go inside your mind a little bit, how you deal with them, especially for some of our younger viewers, because it can be quite easy to kind of go into, you know, a dark place during your injuries, because we put so much reliance on the day in and day out of playing and being around the team. And that reliance really spills into kind of the happiness levels. So for you, I mean, what are some ways you feel like you can approach it after you have an injury?
So, I mean, the main thing for me was having a clear set kind of goal of when I'm going to be back. It gives you something to work towards. And also kind of having a physio team that you really believe and trust in. During your kind of rehab process. So those were kind of like the two main things for me. It was kind of really knowing, oh, I'm going to be back and back like exactly then. And then I kind of could work towards that. And then it's pretty much like we were talking about before, you set yourself small goals during the week, during the 3 weeks, during a month, kind of like, I need to make this progression. There will always be setbacks. No matter what your injury is, no matter how simple you feel like the rehab is, there will always be setbacks. So you just have to kind of roll with those. A lot of speed bumps always, because there are so many complications that you don't think about before when you have, for example, an operation. There are so many different things that you have to deal with. And so you just have to keep going and get through them. Have faith in the people that are helping you, have faith in your physio team, and set yourself those goals so that when you exceed them, you're really happy. But also when you don't make your goal, then you say, okay, well, then I'm going to make it next week. And you just kind of need to keep moving forward like that. I say resilience, again, is just number one. Have that resilience and that belief that you're going to be back and you're going to be better than you were before. It's kind of the thing that everyone says, right? You know, they get injured and they say, oh, I'll be back and I'll be better. It's actually a really good mindset to have. Look at it as an opportunity to get yourself stronger, to make yourself better, to do, you know, maybe some things that you wouldn't have been able to do if you were in the season, you know, because during a season, you're focused on playing the games, you're focused on training well and playing the game at the end of the week and then recovering from that. So maybe you don't have time to work on so much strength and power and speed and things like that. But when you're injured and you're kind of cut on your way back, you have the time to work in the gym, to do those kind of lots of strength training, to do those power training and that, and really up your sprint speed or up your jumping strength or things like that. So use that time well in order to kind of make yourself an even better person when you're back.
And like you said, and the difficulties can arise and there can be waves in it, but having that plan, you know, in the back of your head and kind of experiencing these things before, you know, you've had injuries and then, you know, being able to use that process again to kind of build off of and know in your head, look, I've come back from this, you know, there will be more opportunities. That one injury after you were named in the Euro squad, do you feel like having those injuries before kind of helped you approach that? Because that one is a quite a detrimental one, could be quite devastating for a footballer to reach the levels that you've reached and hopefully have that opportunity once again. But do you feel like, first off, was that probably the hardest injury in your career to kind of get through? And then how did the ones before it kind of help you for that one?
By far the most difficult one I've had. In terms of the actual injury, one of the easiest. It was a 5-week recovery process, very, very simple, very linear. Mentally, the most difficult thing I think I've ever been through. Just knowing that I was going to be in that squad and with a definite outlook on playing games and getting game time in the Euros. So that's kind of, you know, one of my biggest ever dreams that I had when I first went and played for Wales was to play a Euro, you know, play in the Euros with Wales. So that, I think, mentally more than anything, was one of the hardest things I've ever been through. But like I said, I had, you know, good people around me. And once you're kind of into the, once you're through the first kind of week of shock and things like that, you then just decide to put your head down again and just work through it and get on with it. And you can't change what happened. You can't change the past as much as you'd perhaps like to. You know, you think, oh, why did I do that? Or why didn't I take a step less in training there? Or why didn't I just go easy a little bit? You know, why did I train 100% there? But I don't think you can have any regrets in what you do. I think that just leads to you being a bit too negative and too hard on yourself. And that would also change things for you in the future. So I think you just got to get on with it. And once you're in it, it's kind of easier to do because you just get your head down and work hard. But yeah, it was a tough time.
And in reflection of your many experiences abroad, did you ever expect your roadmap to be like this, going from Holland to Slovakia to Belgium and now in Germany?
No. I think, like, if you would have asked me when I was playing in England or wherever, you would have said, oh, what do you think your career is going to look like? I would have said, I'll be at one club for the next 10 years. Or, you know, I think that's kind of like what everyone thinks. But I could have never predicted where I've gone or what I've experienced. Yeah, in a way, I look back very, very fondly on my career so far. And I also, in a way, I've achieved things that I perhaps wouldn't have thought. And so I think, in a way, that's been a real blessing.
And what advice do you have for players who maybe are presented with opportunities abroad, kind of getting outside your comfort zone, particularly leaving your country?
I think it's a very individual experience. So I think my advice, because of my personal experience, would be do it. It's not for everyone at the same time. I think you do need to be mentally kind of tough. You will be alone quite a lot of the time. You will have to adjust to a new culture very quickly and kind of settle into a new team, learn new languages, adapt to that whole side of life. But I think it can be super, super rewarding. So I think even if you do it and perhaps the football side doesn't work out, you'll have learned things along the way that will help you in life no matter what. So in my kind of humble opinion, it's always worth taking that slight risk or that step, because you'll learn not only more about football, you'll learn a lot more about yourself, and you'll also learn a lot more about other cultures.
Yeah, and as many people always say, you know, you can't always grow in a comfortable place. So at some points, there needs to be that kind of step. And as someone who took that step at quite a young age, you know, kind of ripped the Band-Aid off in that term, do you feel like now you kind of seek out those challenges to put yourself in an uncomfortable place or in a place that you can grow and become a better player and also maybe improve, you know, aspects as a person?
Yeah, so I feel like I'm down for anything. So
down for anything.
Yeah. Whatever opportunities come my way, I think I approach them with a very, very open mind. I would never say no straight off the bat to something that might sound, you know, a little out there at first. I would always take the time to really consider that as an option and weigh in all of the things that I know from my experience and kind of take that into consideration and make a decision from there instead of just saying, oh, that doesn't sound like it would be for me. I always take that with like an open mind.
Yeah, awesome. And reflecting on the journey right now, what things would you say helped you to get to this moment? So in other words, why did James make it as a pro and why is he still going?
I think I made it as a pro because I had a lot of help. I had really good people around me who were always helping me out whenever I needed it. My dad took me to every single game and every single training up until I was 18, 19, and I could then start driving myself, you know, so that I was very blessed in that sense. I had a lot of support at home, no matter what, good days, bad days. I had really good people around me in terms of friends and things like that. So I would put my success down a lot to other people and also my sheer determination to make it through whatever came at me, would make it through whatever kind of speed bump there was, and just continue to kind of move forward.
Love that. Yeah. We're going to head into our fast feet round now. Some quick fire questions to end off. Favorite player growing up?
Eric Cantona.
Ooh,
quick. Favorite moment in football?
First game for Wales.
Most difficult moment?
Heart operation at age 18.
Wow.
Oh, let's stop this for a second. What was that like? We can't keep going. We can't move past that.
It was, you can't move past tough. It was tough. It was a moment that it was kind of like, I didn't know if I was going to be able to play football afterwards or not. I didn't know if it could be fixed first off the bat until we'd kind of done more research into it. So just in terms of not having that uncertainty of, am I going to come out the other side of this? That was, I guess, more than anything, that was tough.
Was that in your IX years?
Yeah. Okay, and it was basically put down to a change in my training. So I was going from kind of 3 trainings a week to 5 trainings a week. And that up in intensity caused my heart to kind of overgrow. And then a part of my heart wall grew into the AV node, which regulates your heartbeat. And so my heartbeat was, as soon as I hit like 180, which is kind of like, you know, when you're sprinting and really working hard, it would just kind of like skip to 240, 250-ish. Wow. And so my heart would be kind of beating out my chest. I'd have to lie down middle of the pitch kind of thing, and just kind of like catch my breath. I was incredibly tired, so unable to play football with that. And funnily, we had another guy in my team who had the same, a similar problem, due to like kind of the same thing. His was unoperable, and he ended up having to stop playing football. So yeah, I felt very, very lucky that mine kind of could be fixed. But I also at the same time saw that his career had just kind of ended, because of pretty much the same thing. So that was tough.
The perspective levels on this is quite insane.
Yeah.
Coming back into it, best advice you ever received?
Always challenge yourself, always go one step further than you think you can. Johan Cruyff.
Love that.
Directly
favorite place directly to you
from himself. Yeah, from him.
Wow. That hits hard. Favorite place you've lived?
Amsterdam.
Best player you ever played with and against?
Gareth Bale and Kevin De Bruyne.
I can imagine.
That's tough to top.
Yeah.
If you weren't a footballer, what would you be?
Ooh, teacher or journalist?
Data interest.
Yeah. Data entry? No. They cross it off the list.
I was bad at that.
Do you have a favorite book?
Ooh, yes. Sun Tzu, Art of War.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's been mentioned before. Good one. Any quote or mantra that you live by?
Ooh. Not particularly. No, just enjoy life. Enjoy what you do. Find fun in everything. If you don't find fun, you're not going to enjoy it.
Love
there
that.
You go. I like that.
James, we want to thank you so much for coming on, taking the time, telling us about your journey and giving advice for the next crop of generation of footballers. So we wish you all the best this year and in the coming years. And yeah, thanks again.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. I had a lot of fun.
James Lawrence.
Yeah. We want to say thank you again to James. Yeah, we want to say thank you to the Nuremberg media team for helping us set that up. And yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you a lot of the things that we talk about on this podcast and a lot of the things that we learn from guests, you know, can be quite interchangeable, but there are so many things that are so unique in his path that can put some things in perspective. I mean, that, you know, at the end, sharing about his heart surgery, that perspective that I kind of put in terms of, you know, wanting and having love and enjoying to play the game because he didn't know if he would be able to play it again, is a huge one that stuck out to me. You know, he's played for big names. He's played against big names, and you can tell that that's not really why he does it. You know, a lot of people do it for the name, for the recognition. You can tell that he has that love for the game, for the sport, and for making himself better on and off the field. And I think young ballers really need to listen to this episode in terms of, you know, setting the stage for what you could become, for goal setting goals, for dealing with setbacks, dealing with those games of opinions, you know, rejection, but also coming through, staying patient, knowing when his time was going to come. You know, the list goes on in terms of the things that he's learned and can share in this episode, the things that I've learned, the things that I think young ballers can learn. And that's just scratching the surface on some of the things I've mentioned. You know, hopefully we get a chance to do this again with James, because I think we could even dive into some, to plenty more topics. But, you know, we appreciate the time that he spent with us. And, you know, it's cool to see guys, you know, after we interview them, to go and see them live. So hopefully we get some tickets to that Pauly Nuremberg game, or, you know, a game in the region.
Yeah, no, totally. And I love the fact too, that it seemed that at an early age, he was able to realize that he can kind of use football to just have life experiences. And like you mentioned at the end, it's like, okay, if I move abroad, like, there's really nothing, I can't lose in this situation. Football could go poorly, but now I'm living in Holland, or I'm living in Slovakia, or I'm living in Belgium, or I'm living in Germany. And at this point, I realized, like, yeah, there's definitely, it's a win-win situation. Either both can go great, or at least I just live in a cool place and then experience a new culture. And it's kind of what we've mentioned on this podcast many times. It's like, you can't lose at the end of the day by getting out of your comfort zone, because you just learn and grow as a person. And if the football works out, that's even better. But sometimes there's a lot of luck involved, like you also mentioned, is that sometimes it's just not meant to be. You're in the wrong place at the wrong time and it doesn't work. But vice versa, you can be at the right place at the right time, and then you go from playing in front of 500 fans to 20,000. And then from there, you move on to playing, you know, Champions League, Europa League. So it can happen really quickly. I also like that he was speaking about just having patience, where, like, he felt his teammates were getting moves and he wasn't getting one. But then in the end, he probably got the best move when he moved to Anderlecht. So by just being patient and performing consistently and not dropping your performances because you feel that you didn't get what you deserved, because in the end, you're losing. But just keeping the performances going, and then he gets seen at a particular game against Feyenoord, and then from there he kind of had many, many options at big name club. So that was a really cool, unique perspective to hear.
Another thing I liked that he brought in, and he was very adamant about, was just how much success he owed to his circle and the people around him. And I think we can kind of get caught, especially now, there's just this vibe that, you know, I'm going to do it alone, and the independence. And that's great, because a lot of the times you're going to spend a lot of time alone and you're going to have to believe the dream alone. But it's also so key to have people in and around you that believe in you and believe in the dream as well, and people that you can share things with, because sometimes those difficult moments can, you know, it can be quite a cloudy day, but having those people to reflect in and believe in you and challenge you and call you on your bullshit and make sure that, you know, you're doing everything you can to live the dream that you say you want to live is so important. And to not always just get caught in this, you know, I'm doing it alone, I don't need anyone else, because in the end, that doesn't help anyone. And I think, you know, being adamant about it as he was, I think that puts it in perspective as well.
Yeah.
Great episode, brilliant. All in great all, episode. Wasn't it?
Very good conversation. Yeah.
Another thing that just came to mind before we have a podcast after the podcast was, obviously it is player by player basis, it's case by case basis for making the jumps abroad from your domestic country or from your situation. And it can be quite scary, especially that first move. But you can tell, and just from his words, how open he is to that kind of process again. And what we would say from our own experiences, Sean and I, and what we've talked about on the pod from our stories as well with other guests, is after that first move, it really becomes so much easier. It really is like ripping the Band-Aid off, because after that, now it's just sensation. And then doing it again, it could be scary even the second and the third time. You know, Sean and I are going through transitions ourselves, and the next club that comes, it can be quite scary depending on where it is. But knowing and having that in the vault, and then also being scared but being excited, that's kind of the process that is, it kind of can take you by storm, and, you know, you can kind of get addicted to it.
That's what I was going to say. I think it turns from, in the beginning, it's like a little bit of, you're maybe excited but also scared because you don't know what to expect. That and balance. I think at this point, it's like 99.9% excitement. You know,
I don't know, like, if it's that high. I would say it's more close to like,
I mean, of course, case by case, different.
Depends on the place. Depends on the player too. We're different players.
And the player, exactly. But I think there's just much more excitement because you've kind of seen, you haven't seen it all because you're going to go to a new country and experiencing something you've never experienced, but you've seen a lot. And you know that, like, okay, these are some horrible things that could happen, but I've already gone through that. Like, I know how to fix that or get over that or deal with this issue. And there's definitely going to be some new ones that are going to be interesting to go through. But also there's so many positives. Like we talk about it when you go to a new place, it's like, there's just so much new stimulus. Just walking down the street, just looking at buildings and signs, or going to the supermarket and seeing just everything. It's just exciting, that part of traveling. So yeah, I could kind of attest to what he was saying at the end. He's like, I'm down for anything. I get that.
Absolutely. Look, he sparked a whole second podcast episode within the podcast. So again, we thank James. If you guys want to look out for him, you can follow him on Instagram and you can follow Nuremberg for how they're doing in the second Bundesliga. A lot of games will get, for our American viewers, a lot of games do get streamed on Watch ESPN. So you can always look for that. Non-USA viewers or listeners, I don't know. It depends. I do all my streaming from the US, so.
Yeah, I mean, there's some Reddit VPN links.
I don't know if I should have said
that. Do a Google
that.
Search.
Yeah, you can find it. Some, I think, you like the FUBU things. Accounts or whatever. That, what is that?
There's ways to stream it.
Yeah, there's ways. League, so. Yeah, you can look out for him. And yeah, look out for us. Make sure you continue with that free support. Liking, subscribing, sharing, you know, commenting. You know, if you're a player, just reaching out to us with questions. We always do our consultations. That's a 15 to 20 minute consultation with Sean and I for free. We just ask for your email for a newsletter. You know, connect with us, answer questions, you know, grow in your circle and your network. And yeah, all that good stuff. And I guess there's more to come. We're going to just tease a few things before we actually get them in circulation. But there's more to come this fall. So just, you want to be signed up for that newsletter is what I'll say.
Yeah. And with that, until next time,
keep moving forward,
keep learning,
and make your own path.
Footwork is sponsored by ourselves and great companies such as Kong Fitness. But we love to partner with new brands to make their own path, so get in touch if you must.
Footwork.club, the official footwork website, is now live, so make sure you go join the club and check out all the new content and all the new features. Find us on YouTube at Footwork Podcast. You better like and subscribe while you're there. If not,
I don't know what to tell you.
Find us on Instagram at Footwork_podcast. Great time there. Twitter at Footwork Podcast. TikTok at Footwork Podcast, where we like to post dance videos. Those are great, but more importantly, amazing content for any dream chasers out there. Plug pass. Tell your friends, your enemies, your mother, your brother, your sister, your pastor. It doesn't matter who. Tell the mailman, your dog, anybody that can listen.
Like, subscribe, review, because all of that helps while you're there. We'll take whatever we can get to join the club.
Join the club. He messed me up. I mean, he can just mash it together, so it's fine.